Good morning.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to be here again. So this morning, I decided to talk, I'm going to talk a lot about the WARE lecture that was presented at the UUA General Assembly back in June of this year. It was presented by Brian Stevenson, who is better known perhaps as the author of Just Mercy, the book, which was a common read in the UUA a couple of years ago. He's also the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. A lawyer and advocate for death row inmates, children in prison, and survivors of the American legacies of slavery, racism, and lynching. And part of the reason I'm going to talk so much about the lecture is that I thought it was really good and provocative in the sense that it gave me a lot to think about, and I hope will also give you some things to think about. And it's not available online. Usually the WARE lecture can be seen, you can watch the recording of it. Because of the work he does as a lawyer, when he's out in public, he can't be too public because it might hurt his defense of the people he's representing in court. So some of you have probably seen this lecture. If you would have had to catch it live when he was giving it, live streamed. But if not, I'm going to summarize some of what I thought were the high points. And I wanted to do this because someone among you last month, when I was sort of saying, what do y'all want to hear about next month, said, how about social justice? So my mind went straight to this conversation because this is a man who's works a lot on issues of social justice and some of the thorniest ones around race in our culture. And the lecture he gave, I thought, was just amazing. And it was remarkably simple, actually. He has 4 points. And he said near the beginning of the lecture, if we do 4 things, we can create movement toward justice. 4 things. And he doesn't say, if we do 4 things, that'll be really good. But of course, there's lots of other stuff we need to do too. He just said, if we can do these 4 things, movement will happen in the direction we want to go. Those 4 things, 1, get proximate to the poor and excluded. 2, change the narratives that sustain inequality and injustice. 3, stay hopeful. 4, be willing to do uncomfortable things. And I love looking at y'all, but I'm missing you over here, so I'm going to just turn a little bit. So Stevenson used his work as a lawyer addressing injustice, particularly racial injustice in American culture and in our legal system, to create and illustrate this list. But I think the list is broadly applicable to all sorts of justice issues. And by the way, I've decided that I wasn't right now going to distinguish between different kinds of justice. I know sometimes we put qualifiers on that word justice, or sort and define things and come up with lists of different types, you know, social justice, racial justice, economic justice, and that can be useful sometimes. I find them all so thoroughly interconnected. When I start thinking I was talking with my husband David earlier, and he's like, well, I'd start drawing a Venn diagram. And I was like, yeah, but what's outside the overlapping parts? I'm not sure. So I'm going to just talk about justice. And when I'm talking about justice, I want to make sure I don't mean the legal system, the judicial system in our country. I mean something that's kind of like what we would imagine the world to work like and relationships to feel like if our ideals, like maybe our 7 principles, were more fully embodied in our lives and in the social systems that we inhabit. So, returning to Stevenson's list of 4 tasks required to move us toward justice, you've probably already noticed that I took my title for this talk straight from the first one. He says, get proximate. And at first, I just have to note a little bit of geeky good word use joy that phrase gave me. And it occurred to me almost right after he said it that evening that we hardly ever hear, read, or use that word in that form, proximate. More usually, we say proximity, frequently with a qualifier that takes away a good bit of its strength, as in general proximity. Proximate literally means near, very close, immediately before or after something. Proximity means nearness, which all too easily becomes something we measure as being very near or not so near, perhaps generally in the area of. It suggests a relationship that is close enough more than really close. Stevenson doesn't suggest, when he says get proximate, that we put ourselves in the general proximity of the poor and the excluded. Notice how passive that sounds, or at least to me it feels very passive. Rather, he says the first thing we need to do if we want to move in the direction of more justice in our world is to get proximate to those excluded from the places of privilege. I like that statement. It's direct, active, forceful, and very, very clear. Get right next to them, right up close. During the Ware lecture, Stevenson assured us that we don't have to work out the solutions first. We don't have to have solutions in mind before we go be next to our neighbors. Indeed, he says, quote, "The solutions come in proximity, not before you get there." And I like that. It occurred to me as we were hearing the story this morning. Yay for Seuss, always Seuss, good. But the Sneetches, that when you try to solve a problem from outside, from you know, maybe the general proximity, maybe further away, you come up with solutions like, give me $3 and I'll put a star on thar for you. And then that creates problems. And then you have to solve it with another solution imposed. Give me 10, I'll take it off. And then you really haven't gotten much of anywhere unless people get smart and listen to each other and come up with a different way altogether. Has anyone seen Brené Brown's animated video about empathy? Yes, some of you have. No, don't worry if you haven't. It's really good. But it's this short little animated attempt to explain what empathy is. And it shows a person who's really down. Really blue, they have a gray cloud over their head, and they're in a hole. They're way down in the bottom of a hole. And the unhelpful other stands at the top of the hole and throws down suggestions that don't really make very much difference. Here's a ladder. Why don't you climb up? Do you want a sandwich? There's always a silver lining, you know. The more helpful other in this video climbs down the ladder and is simply with the person with the cloud over their head. Listens to them, talks with them, but more than anything they say, they're just there. They're just being together with them, being near, saying, I will be with you no matter how you're feeling. If Stevenson is correct, this willingness to stand near another isn't just emotionally satisfying. Just like that video about empathy implies, it's the only way to move towards shifting the solution. Having somebody up there tell you all you need to do is climb out of whatever you're in often isn't enough to get you up that ladder. Having somebody keep you company, really truly keep you company, sometimes will shift things. Empathy and proximity, I think, are not just nice. They're justice building. I like this too. I like this idea that both Brown and Stevenson have presented, because this is just me personally. I decided some time ago, decades ago, that after a few years of living as an adult and trying to figure out what we do in the world and what works and what doesn't work and what seems to work for a little while but then opens doors to all kinds of other problems, the only thing we really, really know we can do effectively for each other doesn't mean we can't do and shouldn't do other things, but the only thing we really can do, knowing that it might, the only thing we do at the end of the day is to be with each other, I think. This is my belief. This is what I live out of. And what I hear Stevenson saying here is we have to get proximate to each other. To do that, we have to be near each other. Just to be clear, I notice that Stevenson doesn't just say get proximate. He says get proximate to the poor and the excluded. So it's really nice that I come here and we can be near each other. But that's not what he's calling me to do. It's not what he's calling us to do. He's calling us to get near to those who actually pay for the injustice in the world, the people who suffer those consequences. And I want to be clear, too, that I find this very challenging. I am not adept at this particularly. No matter how deeply I hold these beliefs about the power of presence and the importance of the active pursuit of justice, I don't really live all the way into that. I see people who are much better at it. So I'm going to give you an example of what that I think, and it comes from my own life, that illustrates this continuum along the stretch from working on solutions from the top of the hole, here's a machine that'll put a star on your belly, to somewhere in the middle, which is what I'm going to call the general proximity position, to really what it means to be proximate. So my dear husband, David, works for a state agency that does some really good research work around various issues on which the Tennessee legislators make decisions. He tells me when he goes downtown at lunch, he sees state employees, irregardless of their political leanings, and they run the spectrum, truly, who even those who may be very liberal will usually, most of them, avoid contact, even eye contact, on downtown lunchtime streets with people who don't look like state employees. Now, that's the sort of let's work on things and solve issues from the top of the hole kind of position. And by the way, this is just a casual observation. We don't really know what those people do in other parts of their lives. But out on the streets and being around town, I don't personally spend very much time downtown, but I will occasionally buy a Contributor, which is a newspaper that's produced and sold by members of the homeless community in Nashville. I will occasionally buy a Contributor. I will read some when David brings them home. I wave to Contributor vendors from my car because they're out there waving, trying to make sales, but also trying to just be friendly. And so I will wave to them, even if I don't stop to buy. And I'm willing to make eye contact with a lot of people as long as I feel like I'm pretty safe. So often if I'm with other people, it's the middle of the day, definitely well lit, not isolated situations. So this is what I would call general proximity. I'm not scared to be on the same streets in the same places with people. Now David, of whom I'm a little bit in awe in this respect, actually cultivates relationships with a few folks that he sees regularly on the way to lunch or on the corner outside the McDonald's near our house. He asks their names. He chats with them for longer than I wish he would when I happen to be with him. And he remembers them for the next conversation. He follows up on what was going on in their lives last time he talked to them. He stops to speak with them when he sees them in other places. Sometimes I'm with him, and I know things that I wouldn't know if I were all by myself because of the way he has a way of building closer relationship, of getting proximate to people, of asking them about their lives. And I know a whole angle on the whole homeless, how the homeless people are working with the mayor and how the city impinges upon their lives, the city and its policies and the people who enforce those policies affect their lives, that I would not know from just reading the newspapers because I have a name and a face, and that's because David is very good at getting proximate in certain situations. And that's hard. That's a little uncomfortable. And I'm going to come back to that discomfort because that was one of Stevenson's points. The second thing that Brian Stevenson suggests we need to do to create change centers around changing the narratives that underlie our lives, our culture, our society. We are such storytellers, human beings, we just are. Paying attention to and changing those stories that we do and do not tell, according to Stevenson, will move us toward the world we'd like to build. During the Ware lecture, he illustrated how stories designed to fan fear and anger, narratives of reward and punishment, and the lack of stories acknowledging the painful parts of our American history all reinforce each other, create tolerance of bigotry and injustice, and justify oppression. A short story by one of my favorite sci-fi writers, I was rereading some of Ursula Le Guin's work this week, I came across this line. She presents it as a saying, a traditional wisdom saying from one of the worlds that she has created. It says, quote, "The untold story mothers the lie," end quote. The stories we tell ourselves, say Bryan Stevenson and many others recently that I keep bumping into, don't include, and here when I say us, ourselves, I mean people in the United States primarily. The stories we tell don't include the whole truths about the founding of our nation, the post-slavery effects of ongoing racism and white privilege, or the whole truth about the civil rights movement, of which we are proud and should be proud, but in our pride, we miss some of the incompletions of that movement and the failures of that movement. And Stevenson says, we will not be free until we are unafraid to face our whole history and decide to build better ways to be with each other. The third thing Stevenson suggests we need to do is to stay hopeful. And I like this. Who wouldn't? I mean, hope is a good thing. He says, actually, hopelessness is the enemy of justice, while hopefulness is the key to change. He charged us in that lecture to fight against what makes you hopeless. And this is really interesting to me because it occurs to me that what makes me feel hopeless is not going to be the same thing that makes you feel hopeless. And what he's saying is we have to maintain hope that the world can change, hope that we can achieve justice, hope that we can sustain the justice we have already brought to being in the world. And he says we have to do this because there are people who don't embody the ideals that we know need to be in place to honor the worth and dignity of every being, for example. And he says people do change. It does happen. People change, and we have to stay hopeful because when they change, there needs to be somebody there to work with them. Like, oh, that's a good point. So fight against what makes you hopeless. Despair is not going to help anyone. The fourth thing, be willing to do uncomfortable things. I've heard a lot of people lately, I can't even remember where I've heard it, but talk about getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. I like this. It's a little more active. It's not so much focused on how I feel, but it's be comfortable doing things that make you uncomfortable. It also occurs to me, it's not about doing things that make me feel like I'm wallowing in despair, or things that make me feel discouraged, or things that make me hopeless. It's things that make me uncomfortable. Discomfort is not the same thing as hopelessness. It's not the same thing as despair. Stevenson says doing uncomfortable things, even the willingness to do uncomfortable things, requires a choice. It requires decision. Being proximate can be uncomfortable. And this is, he says, being with broken people is uncomfortable. Brokenness is uncomfortable. And we are all broken. I think that fear, it comes from a fear of being like the people that are labeled as broken in our culture. And it's also the fear of facing that we actually are like them because we are all broken, sometimes, some ways. That's just part of the human condition. And our culture tells us that that brokenness is a weakness. Stevenson is proposing to us that acknowledging that brokenness and being willing to be in proximity to each other, to be proximate to each other, even in that brokenness, is what makes us strong and will make us free. When I look at this list of four things, I notice how much they interconnect with each other. You know, we couldn't talk about getting proximate without talking about being uncomfortable and doing things that make one uncomfortable. They also call to mind to me what some people lately have been labeling the myth of separation, this idea that we actually are separate from each other, separate from the world around us, from the world of rocks and animals and plants, and that somehow human beings are separate. The idea that we can and should survive independently of each other, whether that is at a species level or at an individual human being level. I think this is part of the false, unhelpful narrative that we tell ourselves and each other. And I think it stands in contrast to our seventh principle, which really affirms and emphasizes the interconnectedness of all that is. Part of the reason we have so much neglected history, Stevenson says, and I found this really helpful, he said, we live in such a punitive society. We have a real fear of admitting mistakes, of talking about things that didn't go the way they were planned, or things that maybe went exactly as they were planned, but were really planned for really bad reasons. Like, you know, charging people $10 to remove the stars you just put on. People do things for profit only, and then we're a little ashamed. But living in a culture that is always trying to fix blame, that thinks that blame and retribution, punishment, is part of the solution to injustice, makes us all afraid to own up to the history and the experience and the knowledge and the wisdom that we could claim that could make us more free and more able to be with each other. Stevenson said, one of the things I really liked in his lecture, he said, we need a new metric. I think this is another way of saying we need new stories. Actually, we need a new way to measure success or measure goodness. And he specifically said, grades are not an indication of one's capacity to change the world. And income is not a measure of one's capacity to change the world. Rolling out of town with your belly star adding and subtracting machine and lots of money doesn't mean you actually change the world in good ways. The thing I notice also about this list of four is that they're actually really doable. They're very human scale suggestions if we want to take them to heart and if we're not tied to some idea of having to do them perfectly. Stevenson doesn't say, I'm not going to say that, never mind. we are not called to be perfect. I've said that here before. We're called to be moving in the direction of our ideals and our dreams and our commitments, in line with what we understand to be the way we want the world to be. So what is required of us is a willingness to decide, to think about these things, to choose, to be aware of who we are and where we are, an ability to tolerate discomfort, I think, is required, hope is required, and a certain resilience in that hope. And then attention to our stories, and I think this kind of appeals to those of us who like to get all up in our head and intellectual. But our stories operate at every level of our lives, and we need to learn how to question those stories, how to ferret out why do we all say this? Why do we all assume that's true, or this is the right way to do things, or that's the best practice of the moment? We need to question things. We need to develop skills in changing the story. How do we change stories? So songs change stories a lot. You know, we are a gentle, angry people. How many people have sung that song over how many decades? It's a powerful way to describe who we are and to encompass an emotional reaction to an event, a strong emotional reaction, and also say, and we are angry, but we also love. And we are going to move in the direction of that love instead of reinforcing the thing that made us angry. So we need to be able to change those stories. We need to just simply notice things more. That probably comes before the changing and the questioning, to be honest. And we need to learn how to add new stories and recover the neglected stories. We need to learn the skill of truth-telling and using stories to tell the truth rather than using them for comfort and justification and protection. We're also required to get closer to those who are not privileged in the same ways we are. And we are all a mix of privileged and unprivileged. It doesn't matter who we are. But especially in the ways in which you are aware of having privilege and power, you need to go and seek out the people who are different from you and be willing to stand next to them. Doesn't mean you, what that's going to look like is going to be really different, because you actually have no right to go stand next to them and expect them to educate you. And they may not be interested in being your friend, but you won't know anything more than you already know if you don't go stand next to them. And we need patience. And that's part of the resilience of hope. You know, you need to be able to absorb lots of seeming evidence that things will never change, and know that things can still change. As long as we're all still breathing, things can change. So patience, always, always. So Stevenson says, if we do four things, if we get proximate, we change our narratives, if we stay hopeful, and we remain willing to be uncomfortable, we can move the world in the direction of more justice. So I wonder what this has to do with me. So what if I walk through my everyday, my every month life, or you walk through your life every day, individually or as a congregation, with these four ideas in mind, these four charges in mind? As I've said before, just recently, but also previously, other months when I've been here, and I suspect Stevenson would agree with me, he doesn't, you know, remember the grades are not any indication. Perfection is not required. The point is to create movement in the direction of change, not to get an A+ on the assignment of arriving in a perfectly just world. And note too, these four things, not a one of them says, make sure you read the latest issue of the UU World. Make sure you study, you know, the history of your forebears and what they did wrong or right. It doesn't say, be sure you consult the experts. It doesn't say, make sure that you spend your time on things that turn out next month or next year to be judged worthwhile spending your time on. He says, go be with your neighbor. Go think about what's making poor people poor. What's putting people who don't deserve to be in prison in prison. Think about these things. Think about how we tell stories to each other in our everyday lives, like the color of your skin matters, or people are poor because, and I really think some parts of me, I shouldn't speak to y'all, but I think it's really deep in our culture. If you're poor, it's probably at least a little bit your fault, because if you were together enough, you could at least claw your way out of it. And if you have a lot of money, some part of you deserves that. We really do think that. And I don't know how it gets so deeply ingrained, but I am really convinced that it does. So be willing, what would my life look like if I was willing to actually challenge that? It should actually notice the points where it doesn't make sense in my life. Just to hold those questions open. So I put this all together, and I loved this lecture, and I thought it was great, and I have no idea what it means in my life. I'll be really honest. I have no idea. Here's something that came across my desk this week that I'm going to do. It has roots further back. There was a group at I have a daughter who's in one of the middle schools in Nashville. It's a public school, and there was a group of, it was partly parents and partly faculty at the school, who started a book club, book discussion club, and it was centered around race and equity, economic equity, and schools, really, I mean, because it was a school thing. And they read books and discussed them. I made it to one of the discussions. They kept having them at times, I just couldn't get there. And it was fun. I don't know that my being, it was really, really interesting. I don't know that my being there contributed anything or not, but I'm now in the loop. The group may or may not reform this year, I don't know. But one of the people, one of the teachers who was in the group last year and has now moved out of state, I think, said, oh, look at this thing I just found, and I thought you all would be really interested. And it was a 1971 master's thesis from a student at Peabody College, which is now part of Vanderbilt University. And she wrote a study, that, my daughter's high, middle school is called John Trotwood Moore Middle School. And it was a study of John Trotwood Moore, the man and the school. And he said, oh, I read this. And there's, well, first of all, there's, you know, there's a biographical section about J.T. Moore. And then there's a study of the school. And the school was opened right before desegregation became official in Nashville. And there were petitions sent from the faculty of the school to the school board asking specifically that the school be integrated. And that the, you know, there were discussions about where to draw the zoning the lines for that school, and there was a certain amount of self-congratulation about having 50 African American students out of, like, I don't know, hundreds. but it was, you know, it was the 1960s, I think, early 60s, I think. I haven't read the whole thing. I've read part of it. But it occurs to me, part of this, I'm a geeky historical type. I read the first chapter and I want to go back and read the rest of it. This is a way for me to get proximate in the place where I live, to read that and be willing to discuss it and to be willing to look at how this part of Nashville and the neighborhood goes way back. And it has history that we have neglected to tell. And there have been well-meaning attempts to try to address racism, to move the world, and they've fallen short in some ways. So what can we go back and look at? And how is it like the things that we're doing today? When you read UUA materials from 100 years ago, some of that, there's the Commission on Appraisal that gets to just study and report on whatever it wants to. Some of what they were studying and reporting on 100 years ago is the same things we're dealing with now in our movement. And I'm not just talking about social justice. I'm also talking about organizational practices in our culture as a group, as an association. So I'm going to go and maybe volunteer to help make this book club happen. You know, I'm going to send an email that says, thanks for sending this. I find this really fascinating. Does anybody else want to read it? I'm going to at least read it myself and think about it. Maybe I'll be able to find some people who remember that time and talk to them and see what they remember. I don't know. And I don't know that I can do very much to shift the culture at my daughter's school at all. But I could stay hopeful that things will change. I can stay hopeful that the school system in Nashville can move toward more justice. I don't know. I'm curious, though, about where you see ways in your life, your lives, and I hope we'll talk about this in the second hour, where you can move in the direction of justice, where you can stay hopeful and get proximate. Whose stories need to be told that have been ignored? Which parts of your own stories as a congregation or individually need to be reclaimed because they're still powerful even if they're secrets? What's going on? Where do you feel called to move into relationship and to listen to what people have to say and to show up in the ways that they ask you to show up instead of the way you show up saying, give me $3 and I can fix that for you? Nothing about this, any of these things Stevenson is suggesting, is about going or being somewhere or something in particular, or especially about going somewhere else or being something else other than what we are. It is rather about paying attention in different ways, knowing ourselves as broken, fallible, but also connected, hopeful, and on the move toward what we most desire for ourselves and our fellow beings. So let's think about what that might look like for us here and now. And may we always be hopeful. Thank you.